proceed to the fourth case, Ashman versus Barrows. Ms. Kennelly.
Good morning, Your Honors, opposing counsel. May it please the court, I represent the plaintiff appellant, Wanda Ashman, who appeals from a district court decision granting summary judgment on a claim of retaliation brought under the First Amendment. Contrary to the ruling of the district court in this case, there was more than sufficient evidence from which a jury could have inferred both that Ms. Ashman was denied a job as a DARS encoder and webmaster at the University of Wisconsin for complaining about the university's misuse of LTE positions, limited term positions, and that her superiors, Mr. Barrows and Ms. Jensen, were directly and personally responsible for this deprivation. In ruling that Barrows and Ms. Jensen were not personally liable for the hiring decision, the court erroneously accepted as undisputed fact the defendant's testimony that they had removed themselves from the hiring process on July 10, 2001, and ignored Ms. Ashman's evidence, and in particular, an email that she produced that had been sent from Ms. Jensen to Don Wolston, a job expert, on August 27, 2001, which stated, quote, "I know you are very busy, but did you get a chance to look at our questions about DARS? I have a meeting to work on the exam for publication, and we are pretty much finished with all other sections." This email demonstrated both that Jensen did in fact participate in the creation of the exam for the position after July 10th, or at least a jury could so infer from her statement that she had a meeting to work on the exam. And also, the email demonstrated that the defendants and their witnesses gave false testimony about her participation in the hiring process. In their affidavits, defendants and their witnesses swore that after July 10th, Mr. Barrows and Ms. Jensen were no longer involved, quote, "in any way with the recruitment and hiring process for this position." Ms. Jensen also swore in her deposition, when I questioned her, that she did not even attempt to gather information from anyone as to the type of information that should be included on the exam. And finally, yet another witness, Ms. DeMontigny, who they've identified as the person responsible for the examination process, said that it was she who contacted Mr. Wolston and that Ms. Jensen had nothing to do with this hiring process. All of this is contradicted by Ms. Jensen's email to Wolston. It is also contradicted by the deposition of one of the defendant's witnesses, Linda Heidemann, who had sent in one of the affidavits saying they weren't involved in any way, but then admitted in her affidavit when I showed her the Wolston email that her testimony was no longer true. She recanted her testimony in her affidavit. It was also contradicted by the supplemental affidavit of Ms. Jensen, in which she admitted to having been a conduit of information. This is directly contrary to her deposition where she said she had not attempted to gather any information. Excuse me. Standard jury instructions. And they're important because the standard on summary judgment is, could a jury infer from this evidence that Ms. Ashman was retaliated against because she spoke out on an issue of public concern.
Is it your position that this was sort of a done deal? She was going to get this job.
Exactly.
Until the Isthmus article came out.
Yes.
That's going through all this creating how the position is to be created and everything, it was really a deal where she is going to get the job. We have to go through a couple of little hurdles here, but she's going to get the job. Then the Isthmus article comes out, and she didn't get it because of that.
That pretty much sums it up, Your Honor.
So even with all this stuff is sort of a charade then, this, you know, that making the test up and all this sort of stuff, because this was a job that was going to be earmarked for her. That's your view of the case.
It is. It did seem to be a ruse that they concocted to make it appear that they were not retaliating against her. And I think that they went to great lengths to try to convince that court of that particular defense by submitting all these affidavits saying, we had nothing to do with this hiring process. We removed ourselves.
That's the claim, though, then there's a lot of people involved in a big conspiracy here, right?
Well, I don't know if it's a conspiracy. We have the Attorney General's office drafted affidavits for four witnesses, Linda Heidemann, Cindy D. Montigny, Mr. Barrows, and Ms. Jensen. They all state, Jensen and Barrows had nothing to do with the hiring process. I don't know that you need these people to all get together and conspire and discuss what they're going to say. They're told what to say. And that's actually clear in Ms. DeMontigny's deposition, if you were to read through it. I kept asking her, you say you contacted Mr. Wolston in your affidavit. How do you know that? Do you recall doing that? No. How do you know that? Because it was in my affidavit. Well, who wrote your affidavit? Well, this lady called me from the AG's office and sent it to me. And how do you know it's true? Well, I assumed it was true. That's the type of testimony I received from her as to why she claimed to be the person contacting Mr. Wolston rather than Ms. Jensen. And with respect to the... Well, going on to the standard jury instructions, and I do think they're very important. They're the standard instructions in the Federal Jury Practice Instructions, 5th edition, and the ones that Judge Shabazz himself uses. And they state, quote, if a witness is shown knowingly to have testified falsely concerning any material matter, you have a right to distrust such a witness's testimony and other particulars, and you may reject all the testimony of that witness or give it such credibility as you may think it deserves. And I think there's plenty of evidence here from which a jury could plainly infer that Jensen, and the other witnesses as well, knowingly made false statements about her involvement in the hiring process. This was a material fact. And if the jurors did infer that she lied about this, they could disbelieve other parts of her testimony, including her claim that she was not upset by the article, or that Mr. Barrows was not upset by the article, or that the article had no bearing on her non-selection for the position. A jury was deprived of the opportunity to consider this evidence and the credibility issues that it presented. In addition to those contradictory statements among and between the defendants' witnesses themselves, Mr. Barrows could also be found to have testified falsely about not being upset about the article. One of Ms. Ashman's witnesses, a staff person, Sue Giesler, who worked in the office, testified in her deposition that Ms. Jensen told her that Mr. Barrows was just really furious and very upset about the Isthmus article. And that's admissible evidence. It's evidence by party opponents. It would come in as admissions. And it shows clearly that Mr. Barrows was upset. Ms. Jensen knew that he was upset. And I believe it would be fair for a jury to infer that they acted in a way in terms of this hiring process because they were angry about that article. And I see that I've gone into my rebuttal time, and I'll reserve the rest. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cannelli. Mr. Sweeney.
May it please the court, Ms. Cannelli. To respond to your question, Judge Evans, yes, it has to be a giant conspiracy for all of these state employees to go through the motions. The defendants will agree that this process started out in an effort to give Ms. Ashman a permanent part-time position. However, one thing that has been ignored as the process continues, as happens today, the computer people got involved and said, we're going to have to switch you to a database computer system, which means this is going to be a new job. And these are uncontradicted facts that the district court found, and if we look at the defendant's proposed findings of fact on these issues, it's undisputed that the plaintiff knew, not that she had a job guarantee, but that she had to compete for a position. Defendant's proposed findings of fact 25 through 28.
Do you agree that Burroughs was pretty much agreed that this was going to be her position?
That was his testimony on deposition, absolutely. And that's the reason this whole process began. But to say that in the state of Wisconsin, you can take an LTE and canonize them and say, you will get this job, that simply doesn't happen. The arguments are to the contrary. I understand that. The fix was in this young lady would get the job. She had the opportunity to compete, as those proposed findings that I referenced, which are uncontradicted, and also the plaintiff's proposed findings, 22 through 24, that states she knew that she had to compete for this position. There's a lot of criticism that we've heard that the affidavits were lies. People testified contrary to their affidavits, and when there's an argument like that, I think those who are responsible for presenting that testimony and those who listen to it certainly sit up and listen, because those are serious allegations. But I suggest to you, and the defendants strongly contend, that Ms. Jensen's supplemental affidavit, which remained uncontradicted in the record, states very clearly, and Ms. Connelly made reference to that, I was merely a conduit of information. Does that mean she was involved in the process? And the process that we were concerned about was the creation of the exams. She also testified in her affidavit, again, uncontradicted, that unfortunately I don't know enough about the exam, and so that was given over to the personnel department.
Let me tell you what my problem is here. You know, the fix was in. That's sort of a pejorative term, but
certainly
I don't think
there's
anything wrong with saying somebody's been here a long time, let's make this job at least part-time but permanent.
Yes, sir.
And that was her situation, certainly. Now, position of Burroughs is very involved here. The Isthmus article comes out, and it's very critical of how they're treating these
LTEs.
I looked at Judge Shabazz's opinion here, and he mentions by name 13 different people involved in various aspects of this case, but he doesn't at all even mention this Sue Gisler and this other co-worker, her name escapes me, who both say this guy was furious after this article came out in Isthmus. So if it looked like she's going to get the job, the article comes out. He says, didn't bother me at all that this article was out there, but other people say he was furious.
Correct.
About it. Why doesn't that create a jury question on whether her speech, and that you agree it was a matter of public concern?
Yes, we agreed at that in the district court.
No doubt about it. It's protected speech.
Absolutely.
Why doesn't that create a jury question?
One of the things that even Ms. Connelly brought out in her brief, and that is important, is the time sequence. The original job was posted. The computer people got involved, made a recommendation. And so the original job posting was withdrawn before the Isthmus article came out. And there was no indication, Mr. Burroughs and Ms. Jensen had no idea as to what was going to happen in terms of the Isthmus article, which is comparable to the Reader here in Chicago, I believe, same format. The time sequence is important. They withdrew the original announcement because of the involvement of the computer people, and it was only after that time that they recreated this position based on the input from the computer people. The time sequence, Judge Evans, is very important. And the fact that Ms. Jensen was a facilitator, a conduit of information, belies the fact, the argument, there's no fact there, that there was some giant conspiracy and affidavits were telling lies and depositions were telling lies. There's nothing in the University of Wisconsin or the state of Wisconsin which allows a supervisor to select a person and say you will be hired. All that is offered is the opportunity to compete. She received that, and once the job description changed, she recognized that she did not have that experience for that. One brief point that I might state, she's very critical in her depositions and in her affidavits of the fact that the exam didn't reflect the position. Well, unfortunately, Ms. Ashman was not an expert, and she was not familiar with the new position, so that all of the criticism levied against the examination, in which she did poorly, is frankly a matter for expert testimony, and we have none of that in this particular record. It was a fair process. It started out at her request. And Judge Shabazz, Judge Evans, did find that there was a conflict of fact as to whether Mr. Burroughs was angry. But after the Isthmus article, we see nothing from Mr. Burroughs except withdrawing from the process. There's no effort to tie him into anything. The only effort is to say Ms. Jensen somehow acted as a conduit of information, but no showing what she did. Did she rig the exam? There's no evidence. It's a good argument, but it's not based on fact. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Cannelli. Ms. Cannelli, do you want to address this timeline argument about the article?
Okay. I have two responses to the timeline argument. Number one, Ms. Ashman had told Mr. Burroughs about the event of the Isthmus article, that it would be coming out, and that she had met with his boss, Mr. Wiley, and had complained to him about LTE abuse. Now, that occurred prior to Mr. Burroughs withdrawing from the process. And the fact that he was angry about the article, go ahead.
Excuse me, did it occur, though, when did it occur relative to this change, as Mr. Sweeney describes it, where the computer people restructured what the job would be?
It occurred before. It was sometime in April that happened. The conversation with Mr. Wiley?
That was before.
That was before.
That's the chancellor, right?
That's the chancellor.
The date of the Isthmus article, were the computer people involved in kind of mucking up the whole process here before or after the Isthmus article?
They didn't muck up the process. Mr. Burroughs and Ms. Jensen decided to withdraw the process and to start a new recruitment before the Isthmus article came out. That's what the evidence shows. But the evidence also shows that the critical aspect that led to Ms. Ashman's non-consideration for this position was the fact that there were no questions about DARS encoding on the test, that the test had in fact been rigged. And Mr. Sweeney says there's no evidence connecting Ms. Jensen, but there's that email from Mr. Wolston to Mr. Olson saying, I have a meeting to work on the exam. And their human resource person, Ms. Heidemann, also testified that if the job description included questions, an element of DARS encoding, there should be questions on the exam about that. They've never explained why they didn't ask about a critical component of this job. And that was Ms. Ashman's competitive advantage for that position. Ms. Jensen knew that. Ms. Jensen also knew how angry Mr. Burroughs was about her involvement in the Isthmus article. And certainly Ms. Jensen can be found responsible, I believe, for rigging the exam process in a way that led to Ashman's non-selection. Additionally, the position description that was used as the basis for the exam, that came after the Isthmus article. That was June 25th that was submitted to their HR department. That was after. And that examination inflated the duties of database administration and de-emphasized DARS encoding. And by the time you get to the exam, there's not even any questions about DARS encoding. And that's the critical component of that job. The person hired for the position had to be sent to a training school after she was hired. It was a ridiculous waste of the state's money to do this. I see my light is on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cannelli. Thank you, Mr. Sweeney. The case is taken under advisement.